Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast joins you on the precipice of the Eastern Conference semifinals. It's the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat tipping off in an afternoon evening game. Man, it's going to be weird when the sun goes down. There will actually be Bucks basketball on TV coming up on Monday evening, afternoon evening, however you want to term it, with a 5:30 p.m. tip from the Orlando bubble. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. On the other line is Matt Velasquez. Matt, are you going to be able to stay up? It's been noon. You've been in and out, you know, done with everything at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. How are you going to handle this?
Yeah, I have no idea, but I gotta say I love it. I love the challenge. I love the later nights. I love the fact that, you know, my kids will probably be asleep for a decent part of the time that I'm working. That's the most important stuff. Instead of having to navigate the middle of the afternoon and school stuff and them being awake and around, since I'm not in the bubble, it's just good for me to, you know, reclaim that space and not have so many distractions.
That's true.
You know, gotta be able to stay laser focused when you're talking about Milwaukee Bucks basketball. Gotta pay close attention to what's going on.
It's true, especially in this series. It's going to be a good one, and we will talk about it. We're going to talk about this game against the Magic. We will also talk at length here in the latter half of this podcast about some of the bigger issue stuff. Obviously, everyone is aware of this. The Bucks initially termed a boycott, more of a strike, from Game 5 when it was originally scheduled on Wednesday. They did not take the floor to face the Orlando Magic. That, of course, led into a cascade of postponements, teams electing not to play in basketball, in baseball, in other sports. The NHL followed suit. Several leagues followed suit, and it was a very fascinating moment, very important moment, and we will talk about that in the latter half. But first, we'll tackle the easy stuff. We'll go with the on-court stuff. Game 5 against the Orlando Magic went about as well as I think you could have hoped for. The Magic did make a run that turned a 21-point lead in the second half into a 2-point lead, but then the Bucks had that extra burst, which we've seen on many occasions, even before they got to the bubble, even before they kind of hit, I don't know if you'd call it a speed bump, but you know, aren't maybe clicking on all cylinders. This was, in my mind, their best performance. I don't know if you agree with that. I don't know if you feel now that the Bucks are back to the place where, you know, they should feel very confident going up against a Miami Heat team. I guess now that you've seen them play this series, you know, they win the series 4-1. Everyone expected them to win. They did. Are you feeling like this team has reclaimed a little bit of what was lost, or do you still feel like they have a little bit, you know, a ways to go before they're back to the regular old Bucks?
You know, I think that they and I would agree they still have room to go. I think they are playing well. I think it is worth mentioning, you know, that they did just rattle off 4 straight double-digit wins. It's not like they were, you know, eking by the Magic in these 4 games. After that game 1 where they just looked a hot mess, and definitely weren't up for the playoff moment. And as much as they say they didn't take the, you know, Magic lightly, they took the Magic lightly in that game 1. But if you kind of, you know, go past that, the Bucks, I thought, played really well for the next, you know, 4 games. And it wasn't always pretty. It wasn't consistently just like domination. But double-digit wins in 4 straight games is nothing to scoff at. I mean, that's, you know, that's not easy to do in the NBA, but that's something that the Bucks have done often. And so I think that as people who consistently watch the Bucks, we get kind of accustomed to like, oh, like it was a 14-point win, but, you know, it was close near the end. It's like, well, yeah, with 8 minutes left or 7 minutes left, it was a 3-point game. But then they outscored them by a significant margin and won by 14. I think a lot of people have tried to point to the fact that, hey, like, well, the Magic just didn't shoot well, right? Like, oh, they got all these open shots and they just missed them. It's like, yeah, that may well be the case at certain situations, and it was definitely the case if you're looking at 3-point percentage in game two when the Magic were 7 of 33. But the Magic still shot like 37, almost 38. I think it was 37.7% from 3-point range in the series, and they put up, you know, over 40, probably on average I guess just looking at the stats now, it was 39.8. So about 43s a game, they shot 37.7%. That is, you know,
that's good.
A really good number. I mean, it's a small sample, right? But if you look at a full season, 37.7 would be among, you know, the top teams in the league. The Miami Heat, who the Bucks will play in the next round, they shot 37.9% from three in the regular season, and they were second in the NBA. So saying the Magic just missed, I think, is a little bit unfair. I know numbers have been inflated a little bit in the bubble, but the Magic, I thought they played well.
Yeah, like, I thought so too. Yep.
Like, I think they shot the ball well. I think we can say that with some level of confidence given the numbers. They did miss some open shots. They definitely did. But if you look at the overall shooting numbers, they were good. And they obviously struggled a little bit more inside, which is what the Bucks are trying to do. That's what they do against a lot of teams. They formed a wall, and I thought they formed a wall pretty well against Giannis, against the rest of the Bucks. They made Chris Middleton really work. You know, a lot of credit to James Ennis for that, for really making Chris Middleton work for a lot of that series before he finally was able to get going toward the latter part of the series. You know, Giannis, even though he had to work, he still got his. It's what he does. And different guys on the bench or different guys in the supporting cast, you know, whether it was Brooke Lopez certain games, Wesley Matthews certain games, Marvin Williams.
Hello, Marvin Williams.
Yeah, in game five, you know, different guys had their moments. And that's what the Bucks are going to need. They're going to need Giannis to be Giannis. They're going to need Chris Middleton to step up and kind of shake off that slump, because, you know, he's going from James Ennis to probably Jimmy Butler. So he's going to have even more of a test defensively. He's going to have to be able to, you know, score, shoot and score efficiently on a consistent basis. And they're going to need other guys to step up. It might not be the same guys every game, but they're going to need those guys to step up. And so I think the Magic, you know, they may have been the 8 seed, but they put up a lot of fight. They played with a lot of pride. And I thought that it kind of, like, you know, it was a good look for them. Not necessarily that they were ever going to win that series, but, you know, they made the Bucks work for it. And we'll have to see for the Bucks if that, you know, having to work for it was actually beneficial for them, if it kind of shook them out of their days that they had been in the bubble basketball-wise, if it you know, maybe kind of reminded them that this is going to be an uphill climb, that they're going to face tough challenges throughout the playoffs. Or if it was a sign that, hey, you know, the Bucks had trouble with the Magic at times, maybe they'll have more trouble with other teams. So I thought that first round series was, you know, interesting to an extent. I thought the Bucks played well, I think better than people are giving them credit for. And now they're off into the second round where a really, really good Heat team is waiting for him.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be remembered that the Magic didn't have Aaron Gordon for this whole series. They were massively shorthanded. A lot of guys that weren't even going to be factors knew well in advance, and they did show well. I think that is something that I think it's possible the Bucks play exceptionally well against the Heat, and then there's a revisionist look back at the Magic, like, well, maybe the Magic just played out of their minds. I mean, Gary Clark was playing very well before the series, and for him to have contributions like he did, I mean, I think you've talked about it on another podcast. Offensively, he kind of was just hanging out at the 3-point line taking shots, but he made them, and, you know, he was a factor at some point. I think people will give the Magic credit over time for what they were able to do against Milwaukee in this series. Mention Marvin Williams. He comes out, shoots 4 of 4 from 3-point range in game five, helps really seal the deal down the stretch, took a big charge in that sequence. This is the point in the game where the Magic had made it a 2-point game in the fourth quarter, and the Bucks were, you know, sort of in danger zone of losing a 21-point lead in the second half. Marvin Williams has kind of been, to me, impressive, and you knew that as a veteran guy when he was brought onto the Bucks, you know, eons ago before COVID, that he would have that sort of, you know, he would be that veteran savvy and you could rely on him. But I think right now, in my mind, he's performing beyond what I would have expected from him. He's getting the more minutes than maybe I would have expected. He is a factor on both ends of the floor, you know, at a point where not that we're seeing a shrinking of the rotation per se, but like guys like Ersan Ilyasova aren't seeing the floor. There's a couple guys that aren't getting on the floor, and I think Marvin Williams has moved into a very prominent role coming off the bench. Do you agree with that? Is this greater than what you would have expected for him, or maybe this is kind of what you saw with Marvin Williams when the Bucks acquired him all those moons ago?
You know, I going back to that time is so hard in my brain.
Yeah, right, no doubt.
Like it's so difficult to try and remember what I initially expected. But I would say it's probably better than I expected. It's interesting, you know, Marvin talked after practice on Sunday and he was saying that he's still like learning the offense. Just because, you know, he has played just so few games with the Bucks since he got with the team. I think it's like 19 or 20 games or something like that. It's kind of like a wildly small number. But he still has certain plays that he doesn't know in the playbook. He knows their defense. Their defense is pretty straightforward. And he thinks that came pretty quickly to him. But offensively, like he knows what they're trying to do, and he knows most of their basic plays, their sets and stuff. But certain plays he still doesn't know. So for somebody who's still getting acclimated and still learning, even after all these months, you know, I think he's showing really well. And they're going to need him to round into form at the right time, which, you know, I'm sure they're hoping is like right now. But he's basically displaced either Ersan Ilyasova or Robin Lopez, depending on the matchups. If the Bucks are going to tighten the rotation anymore, it's probably going to have to be Ersan who goes. Because, like, you know, they're already playing like 11 guys, and they don't have a ton of extra backup bigs, but that's where the minutes are going to go, is Giannis will just play more, or like Brook Lopez will just play more, Marvin Williams will just play more, like, or they'll just go small, and they have plenty of guys to go small, especially against teams that, you know, could potentially go small against them in the future, if you're looking at the Heat, the Raptors, and the Celtics. Mm-hmm. And if there's a situation where Bud has to pick between Marvin Williams and Ersan Ilyasova, I don't know what situation it would have to be for Ersan to be the guy you pick.
If you need a charge.
I mean, maybe.
yeah, but maybe
Marvin,
not.
But Marvin could do that, and Ersan hasn't been getting charges this season.
That's true.
You know, the refs are, they finally caught on to his shtick, you know, or something. I don't know what it is. Or he's just kind of lost his Space Jam. You know, he had a Space Jam style episode where he lost his talent and he could no longer take turns. I don't know what it is, but like, I feel like a guy like Robin Lopez was brought in with an eye kind of on the Sixers, and now the Sixers like aren't there anymore.
Right.
Who knows to what extent the Sixers exist anymore? You know, as we look into the future of what next season is and beyond.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But like, you know, back, you know, again, forever ago, when the Bucks brought in Robin, I think that's what it was. The Bucks and Sixers were supposed to be the two best teams this year, and the Bucks needed another big, you know, physical center to be able to throw at, you know, the likes of like Joel Embiid. And I don't know that they're going to find that guy. There isn't that matchup this series. You know, you can put him out there to, you know, go up against Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk and Myers Leonard and things like that. But I don't think that's necessarily the best matchup for Robin, especially when you put him on the defensive end against guys who can space the floor and kind of pull him away from the hoop a little bit more. So the Bucks could be going small more, which could mean Marvin Williams could have a much bigger role in this series. You know, either playing alongside Brook Lopez or playing alongside Giannis Antetokounmpo in smaller, you know, quote unquote small ball lineups. You know, not that Giannis is small by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not a typical center. So I think Marvin is going to be, you know, maybe an X factor in this series. If he can be consistent, play high level defense, be physical and tough on the inside, both on offense and on defense, and be able to stick with some of these pick and pop bigs that the Heat have.
In terms of the Heat, we've discussed, you know, just now and in the past podcast, looking ahead at the matchup, we know what they bring to the table. We know that they are physical, the way, you know, Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler can be problems on defense. We know they can shoot the three ball. Duncan Robinson, Goran Dragic, who's like an eternal issue for the Milwaukee Bucks. He's now starting. He'd been coming off the bench. He's been starting in place of Kendrick Nunn, who kind of faded into the background for a moment there, although he had a pretty decent game four in their win over the Pacers. Jimmy Butler's got a bulky shoulder. That could potentially play into this. But here's the big thing that I feel, and this might just be my perception, but last year at this stage, I say last year, even though it was last year and a few months even more than that, but when they were in the Eastern Conference semifinals, it felt like the Bucks were by far the better team. They were going up against the Celtics team. Yes, they lost game one. Yes, there was a momentary blip of panic, but for the most part, I think cooler heads could have told you the Bucks were going to beat the Celtics. There was a chance they wouldn't, but they probably were going to, and that's what they did. They took care of business. I don't feel like this Bucks team, even though they've won all the same level of games and have shown very well, I don't feel like this team should be considered a heavy favorite to beat the Heat. They should be the favorite, of course. But I don't feel like it's a given that they're going to get past the Miami Heat. And that's a little bit different. Now, again, that might just be my perception. But what's changed? Has anything changed? Is it just the nature of this bubble situation and the fact that they haven't played great inside of the bubble? Is that the only difference? Or is there something else that's different about this year's Bucks team that makes this matchup at this stage of the season a little bit more difficult than what they faced in 2018, 2019?
I mean, there's a chance this could be nothing different than the Celtics series. Like, there is a chance, right?
Yes.
But I also think that, like, and there is like the narrative, like, oh, the Heat like really make things tough on Giannis and they make things tough on the Bucks, which I think to some extent is true. But also, like, last year the Bucks went 3-1 against the Heat. This year, the Heat won that season series 2-1. You know, and one of those games was like the second game of the season that the Bucks were up by like 20 something and then blew it and lost in overtime. And then there was a game that they got kind of shellacked down in Miami. And then the Bucks had a first half where they came out sleepwalking in the bubble and then roared to life and won by 14 just a couple weeks ago. I don't know how indicative of anything any of those games were. I know key guys were out for both teams at different parts of that season series. So I just feel like there's a little bit more juice there. Like, you kind of look at it and say, oh, this could be the team that's like perfectly situated to beat the Bucks. You know, with the way they shoot the 3-point shot as one of the best teams in the league in that regard, with you know, the toughness, the hashtag Heat culture, you know, just the obvious great coaching with Eric Spoelstra, the great defense. Like, they do a lot of things really, really well. And so, you know, with them sweeping the Pacers and having a week off, between series, you know, I can understand how a lot of people are saying, hey, you know what, like, the Heat just like blasted the Pacers, which, you know, they were also missing certain guys, and there were other extenuating circumstances there, you know, that made that series, you know, less close than it could have been. But I just feel like there, a lot of people are saying, hey, you know what, like, they're fully on board with the Heat. What they've seen is great. You know, even though I looked at it today, the Bucks and Heat both went 3-5 in the bubble before the playoffs. So it's not like the Heat were like on this like rampage, like, you know, just crushing teams and rolling through the bubble. Just that the Bucks weren't. You know, neither team was doing all that well. And yes, both teams had guys who sat or who rested or whatever during those games. And certain games they just didn't care about because they didn't have to. They were both locked into the series they were going to have, and the Heat didn't need to try to be the 4 seed. There was no home court advantage. So them being the 4 or the 5, which they knew they were going to be, didn't matter. So, you know, they kind of were able to kind of, you know, rest and be ready for the playoffs. And to their credit, they were ready for the playoffs. They showed up to that series and they took care of business, which the Bucks didn't do, which also is going to feed the narrative that, like, what's wrong with the Bucks? But, you know, I think this series, you know, like I said at the beginning, it could be similar to last year's Celtics series where, you know, Paul Pierce was burying the Bucks after game one and, you know, then had to eat those words as the Bucks won 4 in a row. I wouldn't project that the Bucks would win this series in 5, you know, but it's not out of the realm of possibility, right? Like, I don't think that that's something that like could never happen. I think it's more likely that the Bucks would win the series in 6 or 7. I think these teams are pretty evenly matched and playing on a neutral court. is going to make this thing a little bit tighter, and that favors the Heat, which, despite, you know, a lot of people jumping on with them now, I think are still considered the underdog. If you're betting the series, the Heat are the underdog. So I just think it's going to be fascinating to see the way these two teams come out in game one, the way they adjust to each other, the way they execute, all the things that go into a series, because, you know, the Bucks are going to defend the paint. You know, they reiterated that, you know, Marvin Williams, Pat Connaughton, Mike Budenholzer, they all reiterated that on Sunday, saying, hey, the biggest thing is defending the paint. Like, that's what they're going to do. And they're going to try and get out to shooters as best they can and stick with shooters and contest shots. And continue to believe in the defense that they play. That's been the best defense in the league for 2 years running, which allows a lot of three pointers. And they're going to have to, you know, weather some, you know, big, you know, deep shots from the Heat, and just hope that the Heat don't shoot, you know, over 40% for, you know, 4, 5, 6 games. I don't think they will. Even Devin or Duncan Robinson, who is insanely good at shooting, he went 1 for 7 in game 4 against the Pacers. Like, it is possible. I don't think I've ever seen it before against the Bucks, but it is possible. So, you know, it's going to be a fascinating contrast of styles, and I'm excited to see just the ebbs and flows of the series and how it all shakes out.
I did a 7 things to know about the Miami Heat, available to view now at jsonline.com. I think one of the takeaways I had was, there, you know, the Heat aren't going to be as deep as the Bucks. They really only played eight guys primarily, even in a series in which they led comfortably for a lot of it against the Pacers. And that because Kendrick Nunn sort of faded into the background. Andre Iguodala played, but wasn't getting big time minutes by any means. I'd be curious to know how often they go to the well with Nunn, Iguodala, you know, maybe Derek Jones even to a degree, and see how often those guys get into the game against the Bucks, because I do think the Bucks probably are better in the latter stages of their roster, you know, the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th guy. And, you know, maybe this is a situation where you've seen what we've seen against the Heat this year and last season, where the Heat got a big lead in a game and the Bucks came roaring back. They had that extra, you know, gas at the end. Last year's Heat team is very much not like this year's Heat team, so I don't really want to compare them, but that's just something that comes to mind for me.
And I expect with the Bucks, like, you know, Kelly Olynyk doesn't necessarily play a ton in that series against the Pacers, but I think he might play more against the Bucks, because, you know, he has been a Bucks killer in the past. You know, as a pick and pop big, he's going to get ample opportunities to shoot. Not that the Bucks are going to necessarily be happy when he shoots, but it's going to happen. When you run an old fashioned pick and roll and Kelly Olynyk setting a screen, you know, and he doesn't roll and he instead pops, it's really hard for whoever the guard is to get around that screen, or to, you know, the Bucks don't do a ton of switching. There's a lot of decisions to make there, and the way the Bucks generally play that is the guard chases over the top or under the screen, usually over the top. Brook Lopez and Giannis Kumbo are waiting there in the paint, and then Kelly Olynyk could probably just pop out to the wing and get an open three. Like, that happens a lot, to the point where fans go insane. I can say that from ample Twitter experience.
Can you already hear it? Why aren't they guarding Olynyk? I can just hear this.
100%. It's already happened. I'm like, what are they doing? Bud never adjusts. You know, like all the things that are consistently said. It is what it is. And yes, like, that's going to happen. And you know what? He's going to make some shots, and he's also going to miss some shots. And some of them are going to be open, and some are going to be contested. And some of them, it doesn't matter if they're contested, they're going to go in. And some of them, it doesn't matter if they're open, he's going to miss. Like, it's weird to just say, like, you know, absolutely, like, my job is to analyze and write about basketball and talk about basketball, but sometimes it's just whether the shot goes in or not. And, you know, I expect he'll play more, is the long and short of that. Like, I don't necessarily know who he takes the minutes from, whether it's taking Jay Crowder's minutes or taking some minutes from Andre Iguodala, or they go a little bit bigger, and so maybe Tyler Hero gets a little bit fewer minutes, or Kendrick Nunn plays less, or whatever it is. But I think Kelly Olynyk will play more. That's just kind of my gut feeling. But there's a lot of things they can do out there, and that starting lineup of Butler, Crowder, Adebayo, Robinson, and Dragic, that's a really, really good starting lineup. And you're right. I think the Bucks bench, when you kind of go down the list, has a little bit more juice, has a little bit more to it than the Heat's bench. And we're also going to see that bench more. We're going to see a bunch of those guys, because Bud is going to play like 10 or 11 guys. Like, if he doesn't, I'll be shocked. If in game one, if he doesn't go with a, you know, full bench unit or four guys from the bench plus Chris Middleton or four guys from the bench plus Giannis, like, in the first quarter, I'll be shocked, because that's just what he does. Like, he believes, like, wholeheartedly that playing his guys and getting all of them out there early. I mean, I asked him about this recently. He said, like, getting, you know, everybody kind of into the game where they have that investment in the game, getting them out there early, getting them into the flow is important to him. And it's also important, he believes, to be able to play that many guys so that you don't have to play your main guys, you know, as many minutes. So that at the end of the game, if you need to lean on them, they still have a lot left in the tank. That's, you know, you can argue that as much as you want. You can say that's crazy, that it's the playoffs, you need to play the guys 40 minutes. Or you could say that, you know, hey, that's exactly what they need to be doing so that they can have, you know, Giannis and Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez and Eric Bledsoe, all those guys as fresh as possible for crunch time. And obviously, you know, there have been many situations where that has worked, or they haven't even had to have crunch time because they've been able to run away from teams. You know, I that was mostly the regular season, but I think you know what I'm talking about. So, you know, it's going to happen, and we're going to see a lot of the Bucks bench, and the Bucks bench is going to need to step up to the plate in those minutes. They're going to need to, you know, whether they're playing against, you know, a bunch of Heat starters or playing against a bunch of Heat bench guys or a mix or whatever it is, they're going to need to make sure that they're not just hemorrhaging points those minutes. They're going to need to hold things down, maybe even try and extend, you know, maybe even win those minutes, right? Like, maybe even, you know, come with that spark off the bench and bring and kick things up a notch. I'm interested to see how that goes in the first game, how the bench plays, and then how Bud handles it in the second game, because if those bench minutes are, you know, an abomination, then that would really, you know, bring a lot of cries from the fan base to change things up and to lean on starters more. And, you know, if the games aren't going the Bucks' way, then I think that they would absolutely have to, you know, strongly consider changing things up. But, you know, and like I said, I'm fascinated with the series. I'm interested to see, you know, how things go. And the Bucks are going to kind of be who they are first and foremost. And we'll see in game one if being who they are is enough to get a win and start with an advantage in the series.
Game one, Monday afternoon, evening, however you look at it, 5:30 p.m. tip-off time. Based on what we've seen so far, it's going to be more like 5:48 sometime out in the bubble in Orlando, Florida. The Bucks and the Magic, fascinating series, gets underway Monday. So like I said, let's go back in time a little bit and talk about what's transpired this past week. We know that the Bucks, of course, did not take the floor Wednesday for their regularly scheduled game against the Magic. They came to the arena, just didn't show up for sort of pregame warmups. Clearly the Magic weren't in the loop, as we've come to know and learn. Nobody was really in the loop, that it was a lot more organic than maybe you would have expected. George Hill sort of wasn't sure if he was going to play that day, decided he didn't feel comfortable playing that day with everything that has gone on recently, in specifically in Kenosha, the shooting of Jacob Blake by the police 7 times in the back that led to protests and some rioting in some cases, and a couple protesters were shot and killed on Tuesday night. And of course, we have full coverage of that at jsonline.com, ample coverage of that, all of the events that have transpired there. George Hill did not feel like comfortable playing Wednesday, told that to some of his teammates sort of close to tip. They decided that they didn't feel comfortable either. If he wasn't, it sort of just spiraled from there. They were able to reach the Attorney General, Josh Call, on the phone and ask for some things. They were able to sort of leverage that. Obviously, there were many other games canceled in the wake of that. I'm kind of just going to clear out now and let you take the floor on just some of your takeaways, some of your reactions to this, because this has been talked about a lot and written about and analyzed. I think my question would be how you think history is ultimately going to remember this moment, what role the Milwaukee Bucks will have in this moment, and what, obviously it's hard to answer this without knowing what the effects are. We don't know sort of what the, you know, what dominoes are going to fall from here, but how do you think we're going to look back on this moment in time?
Well, I think that we'll look back and remember the Bucks as being kind of a catalyst for a wider or maybe broader occurrence of political power exercised by players in sports, right? I mean, we've seen players, you know, I know a lot in the NBA, a lot of players exercise their political voice, especially over the past few years, But it's never taken the form. I mean, obviously, Colin Kaepernick is first and foremost among players who have exercised that political voice, with his decisions 4 years ago to start taking a knee during the anthem. And that kind of that is the big thing that ushered in kind of the player political empowerment movement that we've seen over the past few years. So I don't want to say that the Bucks started things when, you know, it was Colin Kaepernick who definitely started things in that regard. But when it comes to, you know, making a statement and missing games and that's something new. And especially to be willing to forfeit a playoff game, which is what the Bucks fully intended to do. Again, talking to multiple players over the past couple of days, you know, they said that they planned to forfeit. Like, they didn't think this was going to be what it ended up being. They thought they were just going to, you know, forfeit the game. They were going to try to use that time to talk to state leaders and really focus on Wisconsin and educating themselves and learning about what was going on in Wisconsin, what they could do, how they can make things better, how they could help. And they were just going to kind of go along and then get ready for game six. And obviously everything took a drastic turn that they weren't expecting, that, you know, the Magic wouldn't accept their forfeit and the rest of the teams in the NBA felt compelled to join them in their protests. And then suddenly Wednesday there were no games, Thursday there were no games, Friday there were no games. And it was, something that spread to other sports where, you know, football teams were, you know, canceling practices and baseball teams were, you know, postponing games and, you know, tennis players weren't playing matches and just, you know, it kind of just spread from there. But I think the Bucks will be remembered as a team that decided, you know what, like we're going to be the first team to do something like, you know, very visible. Teams on their own and players on their own have been doing things, you know, for a long time. People, you know, are, you know, able to make political statements, you know, with their voice, their platform, their money, and teams and leagues are no different. They've been taking political stances for a long time. But for a team to take that kind of, drastic step to be willing to forfeit a playoff game, like I said, it's new. And I think that it ushered in a conversation between the players in the league about, you know, what more do they want to do? Like, the NBA has been very politically oriented for a while. The NBA's players have been politically oriented for a while. Like, you know, especially when it comes to the Black Lives Matter movement, I think they've all agreed, yes, like, we want to be in support of that. That is definitely an NBA player stance, or at least a predominant one. And so, you know, the Bucks' decision on Wednesday, you know, created an atmosphere where they, you know, the players and the league and the owners, they all needed to come together again to say, okay, like, now what? Like, what do we want to do? If we're not going to play games, what is it going to be for? What are the action steps going to be? And the Bucks, I don't think they had a plan for, like I said, they didn't plan for this to be as big as it was. They just planned to not play the game, to try and make things better in Wisconsin. But in order to take things to a broader level and to encompass the full league, they needed to have those conversations. And that resulted in multiple commitments and plans by the players in the league to really especially push voting. I think that's something that whether you are a Democrat or Republican, independent, you know, no matter what party you're affiliated with or not affiliated with, whatever, if you're left or right leaning, I think you can agree that voting is a good thing and a worthwhile thing. And it is part of what makes our country a great democracy, is that we all have the opportunity to have our voices heard. And so they've really pushed that, and the NBA is trying to, you know, turn as many arenas as possible into voting centers, or offer them for voting purposes, whether it's actually voting or counting ballots or whatever they need to do, you know, take their spaces and make them worthwhile or useful to the voting process, which is something that, like, you know, maybe it would have happened without the Bucks protest, but I think it was also spurred by the Bucks protest. You know, the ways that the teams and the leagues and the league and the players are going to kind of work towards furthering, you know, social and racial justice issues, and police reform issues. That stuff may have happened in the future. People may have worked towards that anyway. But I think the Bucks, by making the decision they made, pushed that to the forefront. I think that's one of the things that players, in talking to us over the past few days, they brought up was like, hey, this was a time to step out of the spotlight, to step back and allow people, that space and that time and that kind of discomfort, because you're not watching sports, you're not being entertained, you're not having your mind taken off of other things. You're forced to think about and face the realities of the world that we live in, the world that you live in. Like, whatever community you're in, whatever is going on, positive or negative, you can have more time to think about that because you're not paying attention to the game. That's what they were trying to kind of going for. And I think that it is a powerful statement to do that, to make that choice, to kind of, follow your heart and your gut in that moment. I think everybody, has the ability to kind of listen to their own conscience and decide how they want to handle things in their own life. And that was how the Bucks felt about their lives and their situation. And, whether you agree with it or not in terms of what their aims were, I think I would say that we could agree what they decided to do, like I said, was pretty powerful and was based off of their own convictions.
Yeah, and it's hard to talk about this without being pretty clear about where you fall, sort of politically, political spectrum-wise. So I guess I'll stop trying to play it in the middle. But what I love about it is it really sort of indicates that this is a power that members of the sports community have. They could say, you know what, tomorrow I'm not happy with something, we're not going to play, and then all of the NBA could shut down and MLB and sports in general. For so much the rhetoric you hear in response to this, if you're a sports writer opining about something politically or you're an athlete opining about something politically, you get the stick to sports, shut up and dribble, things, rhetoric like that, garbage rhetoric like that. And this shows, you know what, we're not going to pretend that these things exist in different universes anymore. That's what those who put that stuff out there, that's what they want. They want sports to be separate and a compartmentalized part of their life where they don't have to think about politics. I mean, that period of time is over. You can't do that anymore because we've seen here that all of sports could shut down, just say the word, and it only takes the right influencer, someone like LeBron James or a playoff game or something. It only takes that right moment to spur everybody to sort of follow suit. And it's not that they're not going to shut down the entire NBA season, as we found out, although I was pretty sure that's where we were headed when this first happened. Major League Baseball didn't stop. Most teams took a day off, took a game off, but they did come back to play. So it didn't necessarily have the seismic shockwave on the front end that I guess it could have had, but we know that's possible. I mean, these are people with some serious leverage, and in many cases, especially in the NBA, many people of color who have a significant amount of resources, money, and power here, and they are not afraid to wield it. And I love that, I don't want to say threat, but I love that that's there so that everyone knows, look, sports is not separate from the political landscape. Everyone sees what's going on. Everyone knows what's going on. There is injustice that needs to be addressed. And now we know that it could happen and it can happen again. And the players have said it could happen again. Regarding LeBron James, interesting reading about him. He's been supportive of what the Bucks are doing. There was also some early reports that the Lakers and Clippers, I think this is a fairly known fact, left the meeting of all the NBA teams after these strikes began to sort of discuss what the next steps were. At the time, it looked like the Clippers and Lakers were not coming back, that they were going to be done in Florida. And it's easy to sort of make that jump if you're a Bucks fan, to say to yourself, oh, he's miffed that this wasn't more networked. This wasn't a universal thing. This was just kind of the Bucks going rogue, so to speak, and that LeBron James wasn't able to be a part of it or wasn't in on it, and that he was maybe hurt by that. I personally think LeBron James should be the face of it, and I like the idea of him being involved. And again, everything he said has been complimentary to the Bucks. The Bucks don't have to explain themselves for why they did what they did. But what was your thinking on that? Seeing the team sort of awkwardly come together. I kind of figured when this happened, this was an NBA wide thing. This was coordinated. But the Magic were out on the court. We know the Magic weren't in on it, and obviously we found out other teams weren't. I guess what's your takeaway from reading about how these meetings have gone down, knowing that the NBA kind of had to coalesce around the Bucks here, maybe not even necessarily, what their plan to do so? Like, what do you see from that?
Yeah, I mean, it all started from, I would say, a good place, right? Like, George Hill decided, okay, I don't want to play like, I'm not feeling comfortable with it. Like, my heart's not in it. I don't want to play, and I'm kind of out. But he also, you know, in talking to us after, you know, the replayed game five on Saturday, you know, he said that he didn't want to sway his teammates. He didn't want to tell them early in the day and have them be like, oh, well, since he's not playing, like, I have to not play. And so he just kind of kept it to himself. And like, that was his thought process was, if I tell them, then I am going to force people to do things that they don't want to do. And I don't want to do that. Which I think is a, you know, a fairly logical and reasonable, like, you know, perspective to have in that moment. And so he decides he's not going to play. He goes to the arena. He gets there. He's hanging out in the locker room. He's not doing pregame stuff. Oh, the other guys on the team, they went out and did pregame stuff. Like, Wes Matthews said that, like, at the time that they decided not to play, like, he had been putting on his game shorts. Like, he was ready to go. And so, you know, but it just happened to you know, become obvious to George or to other guys on the team, hey, George isn't doing anything. He's not warming up. He's not, they have, you know, I can tell you from being in the locker room before the game, on the whiteboard, at least at Pfizer Forum, like, and usually at away arenas too, like, they have written on the whiteboard the order that guys are going to go out on the court for pregame warmups. They have it scheduled down to, like, you know, 10-minute blocks or 15-minute blocks. And, you know, guys know when, you know, who the guys are before them and who the guys are after them on the court. This is part of their normal routine. And so the guys, you know, before and after George, who don't see him on the court, like, they know something's up. Like, they know, you know, this is different. And so it was like Sterling Brown who first kind of found out, like, hey, George isn't playing, and he decided he didn't want to play either. And it just became, you know, Bucks players deciding, you know, in their words, to stand with their brother. They said, hey, if he's not going to play, and if Sterling's not going to play, then we won't play. And obviously Giannis Antetokounmpo was big in that, as a team leader, as the reigning and presumptive MVP. He also said he was out, and, you know, with all three of those guys saying they were out, I think it made it a little bit easier for the rest of the team to say, you know what, like, this is what we're going to do. So I say all that only as a preface to say this was not planned in any way. This was not expected in any way. It wasn't expected in the Bucks' own locker room. Like, so, you know, for it to, you know, become what it did, obviously blindsided the whole rest of the league. It blindsided everyone. You know, and it blindsided me, that's for darn sure. And so, you know, I think it was Wes Matthews who said, and I think George Hill might have said it too, like, you know, the Bucks probably could have maybe planned it better and maybe could have communicated a little bit better. But at the same time, like, it wasn't like any of this was planned. So, like, there might be some regrets to the way things went down. I don't think they're apologetic at all for the fact that it did happen. But I think that, you know, if you're going to do it again, or if you could go over and do it again, maybe it'd be handled a little bit differently and maybe give people some more heads up or pull more people in or whatever. So I can understand why that Wednesday night NBA wide, like, player meeting of the players from the 13 teams left in the bubble, I get why some players there were upset. Like, I get why, you know, there was, you know, a lot of raw emotion in that room. Guys who maybe agreed with the Bucks, like, you know, in principle, like, didn't agree with the fact that they had just been pulled into something that they didn't choose. And so there's a lot of, like, frustration and anger. I know that a lot of the reporting was that, you know, LeBron James was mostly mad that, like, there was no plan for what was next. Like, you know, and I think the Bucks, you know, it's fair to say the Bucks didn't have a plan for what was next. That they just kind of said, okay, we support George. Now what? Okay, let's try and, like, talk to some policymakers in Wisconsin, which, you know, I think it was Wesley who did say, wow, like, we were able to get a whole bunch of people on the phone, you know, just in those few hours we were in the locker room. Imagine what we could do with, like, a full day or 2 days or a week. Like, instead of just having, like, 2 or 3 hours, like, imagine what we could do. Like, so, yes, like, they did some things. But suddenly, when this becomes a much bigger scale issue, when the whole league is stopped and every team and every player is now part of this, like, you have to have an idea of where you're going to go. And so I think that that is where some of the frustration is, or was, among the players. Not that they thought the Bucks were wrong, you know, on their face. It was just that there wasn't a plan of action for going forward. You know, and so I think the Bucks get that. I know I get that. And I think that cooler heads eventually did prevail. The guys slept on it for a night and then came back Thursday morning and said, okay, we're doing this. Like, what do we do now? And people started to kind of pull together, talk about things, decide, yes, like, we're going to keep playing, but what are the things we want to accomplish off the court? And things have started to come together. And, you know, that did take some time. That did take, you know, Thursday and Friday and in lots of meetings, lots of discussions, you know, lots of just candid talk and people, you know, going into their networks and working with the people they know, and owners having to come together and decide how they were going to handle things, and the league and the Players Association having to work together. And I think it helps that in the NBA, it seems like more than other leagues, the Players Association and the league have a pretty good, you know, relationship and ability to work with one another. And it was all able to, you know, turn into something where there are goals and actionable steps that the league and the players can take together. So, you know, yes, like, some of that could be perceived as LeBron wanting to be in charge, wanting to be the face of everything, wanting to, you know, be at the center of the moment, even though that moment initially didn't belong to him, or maybe doesn't belong to him. And I get that. I know some Bucks fans probably would say, hey, LeBron, like, get out of here. Like, this isn't about you. But I also, you know, believe that, you know, LeBron James is LeBron James, right? Like,
yeah, he is the face. If he doesn't want to play, then the NBA is done. You know, like, it's that right. Simple.
And, you know, he is the best player in the league. Obviously, Giannis is going to be the MVP again. But when you look at the breadth of his career, he is one of the greatest players to ever play the game. He is a great businessman. He is a great philanthropist. He is a great, you name it, he's pretty great at it. And so if he's going to be part of something and he's going to be scrutinized, you know, because, you know, fairly or not, once all the NBA players agreed that they weren't going to play, he is now part of that, and he is going to be scrutinized in different ways, and maybe probably more than other players, because he's agreeing to be part of it, and he's LeBron James. So everybody's going to ask him, well, why are you doing this? What are you going to do? And he needs to have answers for that. He talks, you know, virtually every day, and he's going to have to, you know, kind of face those questions and face those challenges. And he also has a lot more means than a lot of other players. I mean, a lot of NBA players are rich, but not very many players are LeBron rich, if any. And so, you know, he if he's going to be part of that and part of a movement, he needs to have answers for how he is going to proceed. And yes, that may make him sound petty, or like he is, you know, has a need to be in control or anything like that. You know, I think, which sometimes those can be fair, you know, comments or concerns or issues that people take with LeBron. But, you know, like I said, I also understand his perspective, to an extent. And like I said before, I think over time we've seen that cooler heads have prevailed, and, the teams and the players and the league have come together to figure out what they want to do. And I think they're going to continue to work together. I don't think this is like a flash in the pan thing. I think this is going to be a consistent push for a while.
Yeah, the NBA, to its credit, has tried. They definitely, you know, and there's always going to be some concern about a corporation co-opting this struggle for its own purposes. That's always something to keep in mind. But the NBA has really encouraged this sort of action, basically, and the organizations have as well. The Milwaukee Bucks in particular have always been behind their players. A couple quick things before we get out of here. Referring to LeBron, for anyone to suggest that he hasn't, you know, that he could be doing more or something. I mean, the laundry list of things that guy has done on, you know, from, you know, vote related to voting, related to schooling, all those things. I mean, just look them up. Like, the guy is everywhere. He is absolutely making a difference in all the communities he's a part of. And when anybody says, suggests he or anyone else in the NBA isn't doing enough, that really kind of makes my blood boil a little bit. Secondly, I would love to see Sterling Brown hit a big shot at some point in this series or in this playoffs, because I still think, nationally speaking, I know the Sterling Brown story is out there of how in 2018 he was tased by Milwaukee police and thrown to the ground for essentially, you know, parking weirdly in a handicapped spot in an early morning at a Walgreens, and still has a lawsuit pending against the city of Milwaukee. I mean, a real life crusader for some of these things. This is when he is an NBA player. This wasn't, you know, a mistaken situation. I mean, obviously they want, you know, you want justice for every black man, of course. This guy was a public figure, and he still couldn't, you know, he still couldn't get somebody to give him a fair shake. So I think that his story will be more traveled. I'd love to see him take a spotlight and sort of further spread his message and the Bucks' message. And then the last thing I want to talk to you about, because I can't believe it, I forgot all about this because so much has happened. Giannis won Defensive Player of the Year since we last chatted, won the award in a landslide. Which surprised me. The outcome, the voting total surprised me. Giannis winning didn't, but the fact that he won so convincingly really caught me off guard. I thought it was going to be a really close vote with Rudy Gobert, actually. That wasn't the guy who ended up in second place. But real quick, just a couple thoughts on him taking home that award. I'm guessing you thought that was going to happen too, but I don't know if you thought it was going to be by that many points.
Yeah, I thought it was going to happen. I voted for him. I mean, I am one of the people on the international 100-person media panel, and so I voted
yeah,
for
are.
Him.
You're a big deal.
I guess so. If you say
yeah, you
so,
are. Absolutely, I say so.
You know, but I had I'm pretty sure I had the guys in that order. I think I had Giannis, then AD, then Rudy Gobert. I thought he would win. I thought it might be a little bit closer than it was. But I thought it was pretty clear. I thought there was enough in his favor. That he would take the award somewhat comfortably, just because the Bucks have been the best defense in the league 2 years running, and obviously last year doesn't matter, but I think it still does play in some people's minds. His numbers when they're on the court are just their numbers when he's on the court are just insane. His ability to defend outside, inside, help, you know, weak side. ISO, just no matter what it is, he's really good at it. His counting stats, like his blocks and his steals, weren't, you know, as high as they have been other years. But his defensive rebounds were the most in the league on a per game basis. You know, he's just a monster when it comes to like chase down blocks, and making kind of those like hustle plays, challenging guys near the rim. Just all of it. It's weird because, like, is he the guy who makes the Bucks defense go? Like, yes, but also there are multiple guys who make that go. Like, you could say it's Eric Bledsoe at the point of attack, and he's someone who was a first team all defensive player last year and could be in the conversation for one of the all defensive teams this year. Brooke Lopez in the middle has been a revelation over the past couple of years, particularly this year. You know, he's never been known for the defensive side of the court, and this year, I mean, it was he and Rudy Gobert, among true centers, were probably the two best defensive centers in the league. And some people had Brooke better than Rudy. Some people had Rudy better than Brooke. I had Rudy better than Brooke. But it was super duper close in my mind. And so, yeah, there's all these guys in this Bucks defense who are really good. But Giannis is what takes them to another level. I think if you had, say, you know, just like a replacement level player in for Giannis at his position, even with the same size, just not with the same skills or physical gifts or whatever it is. I think their defense would still be good, but it wouldn't be like spectacular. And that's kind of the difference, I think, is that, you know, his ability to clean up some other people's mistakes, to help off the weak side and to do it in such a way that he just has such a big presence to challenge the shots that he challenges, to be able to switch onto basically anyone on the court. That's what takes the Bucks defense, I think, to another level. If you kept everyone else the same. So, I think it was, oh gosh, that was so long ago that it happened. I'm trying to think back to like what he said and that night and the moments. I think the biggest takeaway was that Bud had jumped on a table in his excitement. And
Giannis was emotional too. He was really excited to win that award.
Yeah, and he at one point was starting to tear up, and he's like, "God, I told my teammates I wasn't gonna cry." Yeah.
After the MVP speech last year, fat chance. We know he's gonna cry. It's cool. Well, it's endearing.
Well, the thing is that like I wasn't sure, right? Because like winning an MVP for the first time and being on a stage in front of all the people you've ever played against
your
or
family.
Looked up to, your family, like it's like the culmination of hundreds and thousands of hours of work and dreams and just the whole path that he's taken in his life. Like I can understand in that moment, but like what happens when you win an award like after that, right? Like you've already like reached that like pinnacle of individual achievement, and now you're in a bubble and you're accepting an award on TV and all that, but like maybe you do play it cool, right? Maybe like, all right, I've won MVP before, like like defensive player of the year, like it's cool, like thanks guys, but like I'm good. Or but he was genuine and heartfelt, and like whether you're talking about defensive player of the year or the series against the Magic or the protest the Bucks decided to make. Like, I think one thing that's been consistent is like these guys like genuinely like each other.
Of course.
Like, yeah. I would say they love each other. Like, and they stand with each other. They stand for each other. George Hill was saying that like when they went back to go play Game 5 for the second time, he told his teammates like, hey, like I'm gonna stand with you the way you stood with me. Like, you guys, wouldn't let me be by myself in my decision. Well, I don't necessarily always want to be back on the court. My heart isn't always back in the game, but I'm going to play and I'm going to be there because you guys are there. And because, I need to stand with you the way you stood with me. We started something as a basketball team. We need to finish it as a basketball team. And that means going back on the court together. I mean, Giannis was talking about the text that he was sending to George Hill, supporting him, telling him he loves him. He's proud of him. They're going to be talking about this at barbecues like in the future. These guys, I've seen it up close for as long as I've been covering this team. They really do have that chemistry. They really do care about each other. And I haven't, been around other teams in the same way I've been around this team, but I don't think this is as normal as maybe some people think it is. Some other teams, you are coworkers. You're work buddies. You might have a couple friends on the team, but I think that with this Bucks team, there is that genuine love there. And that's when Giannis kind of started to choke up a little bit. When he's talking about defensive player of the year, it was talking about how, the guys on his team are what made it possible for him to win that award, the way that they all worked together, and made it easier on him. And he was extolling kind of all the good things the other guys do. And that's kind of where it comes from, is that it is a real feeling and emotion when they talk about each other, that there is that, as coaches would say, care factor that's there. And I think that is special.
Yeah, and how important is that in this bubble? We've already heard players talk about how frustrating it is being in Orlando. And it's coming up on what? We're past the 50-day mark where they've been in this sort of self-contained area. They're probably getting antsy. And it's pretty important that they're surrounded by people that they enjoy spending time with. And you know that not every team is going to have that advantage. You assume most of them have a pretty good rapport at the very least. But you know how much these guys care about each other. And I just love it that athletes... You do sometimes hear, well, the award is nice, but it's a team award. It's about the wins. I just love when an athlete is just elated to pieces to get something that isn't necessarily the MVP or on the beaten path. Like defensive player of the year, I'm sure doesn't register for everybody, but obviously it's super important to him. He takes pride in his defense. It's really cool to see him react that way. Really, really endearing to see him react that way.
And saying all that about the Bucks, it kind of stands out to me, the fact that in these days after, their protests, after they didn't play against the Magic, that guys are saying that we thought we were close, before, which I thought they were really close before. Like, we're so much closer now. And the way that, it was a room full of grown men being vulnerable with each other and vulnerable with their emotions and telling stories and being raw and real with the experiences that they've had and the fears that they have, the ways that they perceive the world and they're concerned for their families, for their children. That is something that no matter what happens on the court for the rest of the time they're in the bubble, I think that's a day and that's a moment and that's a feeling that all of them are going to take with them for the rest of their lives. And, you know, like I said, it's just kind of crazy to think that as close as they were, that they're somehow even closer now.
You and I, Matt Velasquez, we are not close at all. We are doing all of this virtually. We have not seen each other in months, but we still have that rapport. And maybe after an hour of podcasting, we are also a little bit closer. It has been a long one. We have to get out of here. Any last thoughts before I send you on your way?
No, I think that's it. Let's do this again soon and talk about the actual goings on of the Bucks Heat series, which again, I reiterate for the millionth time, will be fascinating.
It will be fascinating. Yes. And find everything Matt Velasquez has at jsonline.com. You can check us out, this podcast, if you don't already listen to it regularly. You probably already know this, but if by chance you don't, it's at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. Plenty of my stuff at jsonline.com as well. 7 things to know about this Miami Heat team. That's up there now. Hopefully you find that, and we will join you again next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.